Listeners, we just recorded this Dune Part 2 review, and we spoiled more than we said we were going to spoil. So we, of course, talked all the way through Parts 1 and Part 2 of the movies, but we also gave away future storylines by discussing the books. So listen.
You're fine. It wasn't that bad. You can handle it.
There were some significant spoilers for future stories.
If you don't like it, then you take it as a sign to spend a little more of your life reading, okay. Less on TikTok.
So listeners, there's your spoiler away. We're going to talk about all the books and the two movies, and even David Lynch a little bit.
That's
all right.
True.
That's it. Here you go.
Episode 1130, Dune Part 2 movie review. Woohoo!
To the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Bendy Bono. We're back.
We're back. And we're ready to review what I think is going to be my favorite movie of the year.
It's pretty great.
I don't see how anything could beat this, although yeah. I am seeing Deadpool 3 later this summer.
I mean, that could be it. You haven't seen Madam Web yet.
Here's what I'm seeing in the theater this year. No jokes here.
Yeah.
I'll probably see Deadpool 3. I am seeing Godzilla and King Kong, whatever that's called, Kingdom something. Planet of the Apes has a Kingdom movie coming out.
Yeah, so far Dune 2.
It looks like Dune 2 might be the year.
I don't even need to see those ones. I didn't know you even liked the other Deadpool movies.
Yeah, I don't love Deadpool, but he's entering the MCU with this movie. So got to do it. I'll be there.
That's called an addiction.
So,
or an abusive relationship.
But let's talk about Dune Part 2 because I loved it.
Well, before we talk about Dune Part 2, one other movie we should talk about that just won Best Picture that we're going to review is Oppenheimer.
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I can give you my code.
I'd love that.
If I give it to you this week, maybe in 2 weeks, we can review Oppenheimer.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds fair.
It cleaned up last night. Christopher Nolan now has won Best Director.
Yes, and I wasn't aware. Did you watch last night?
No.
I did watch, and you know, they give different facts along the way. I never knew that he'd never won.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I guess I assumed he'd won by now, but it's his 8th nomination, first Oscar win.
Yeah, it's a big night.
Same thing for Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
I think he'd been nominated. This is his first win.
He's super good in it.
Cillian Murphy, first win. So,
and I was glad it won for editing because, as you'll see, the editing is just spectacular.
Yeah.
In it.
I think the soundtrack one or whatever they call that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes. So in 2 weeks,
we'll Oppenheimer. Review Oppenheimer.
Okay, I like that.
But
you know, I've seen every Christopher Nolan movie, so I was thinking last night, man, it's crazy. I haven't seen this one yet.
It is. It's his best movie.
Wow. Okay.
But is it as good as Dune 2?
I doubt it.
I doubt it. Dune 2 is pretty great. I don't know. I mean.
I know we're gonna review Oppenheimer later. So if you just say.
Let me rewatch Oppenheimer again. Okay. I'm seeing Dune 2 again this week. I'll see Oppenheimer again this week. I'll try and give they're both great movies in very different ways. And from two directors who managed to take the blockbuster, the big budget thing, and do intelligent things with it, which is very unique in this space. I mean, you know, you're talking about you're going to see Madam Web and all these other movies you listed.
Hold on a second. Eventually. Like, that's not what I'm racing up to see.
Like, you know, King Kong and Godzilla.
That I will go
yeah,
see.
Like that. I mean, you're going to see it, but I think you'd agree. It exists in this sort of trash space. Now, every now and then it can be fun to wallow in a little trash, so I'm not judging you. I am,
sounds
but I'm not
judgy.
A little judgy. But like what Christopher Nolan and Denis Villeneuve, there's nobody else who is taking these big budget movies and doing this with them. I feel like James Cameron would like to, but that time has passed.
Yeah.
But Dune 2 was spectacular.
All right, so there might be spoilers here, listeners.
Yeah, I think
we're not going to protect you.
We're spoiling both the story as well as the adaptive choices.
Yeah, so are you saying we may spoil the book
and the movie.
Part 1 and part 2 of Dune?
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Yes. Yeah, well, because somebody probably has read the book
and
hasn't seen the movie, so I want them to understand we're going to talk about the movie, obviously. Anyway, yes.
So I invited you to look at my review, but I did not look at your review.
I read your
I'm
review.
Assuming it's a 5-star movie for you, right?
Yeah, it's a 5-star
okay.
movie.
Same for me.
Loved it. I think especially, you know, the two parts complement each other very well. This is higher on spectacle, but they are really, it is like Lord of the Rings, where it's one long movie. You don't just sit down and watch the Two Towers or something.
I think this is even more connected than Lord of the Rings. To me, those feel like each of those films has a distinct feel. This one just feels like the story kept on going.
It's true.
You recommended that I watch part one first.
Aren't you glad you did?
Yeah, such a good recommendation. It just got me back in the world. Yes. It reminded me who's playing which characters. And yes, it was needed, I would say. So I finished. I actually stayed up late the night before. Finished Dune part one at like midnight or 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Went to bed. Next day, took time off of work. Took a half day at work just to go see this movie. And loved it.
Did you get yourself a popcorn bucket?
I tried. They were sold out.
Oh, my goodness.
They were sold out. I did think about going.
I'm a rare commodity.
I know. I thought about going prior to me actually seeing the movie because I knew they'd be selling like hotcakes, and I never did. So, yeah, I went up to there, and I asked the guy, and for some reason, I felt embarrassed. I was like, do you still have the Dune popcorn bucket? And he said no as if like, no. He didn't say these words, but it was as if they'd been gone for weeks, although I know that's not actually true. But I think the implication was, they sold out fast.
I'm going to just, as we're sitting here, see what I could get for my Dune popcorn.
Remember 2 weeks ago we checked and it was $50.
So let's just see what they're going for on eBay. $84.99.
Holy buckets.
$80. Yeah. Well, this one's for $40, but it's from Thailand and you have to pay $30 shipping. So
Yes. I mean, you're going to keep it though, right?
Yeah.
This is not something you sell on eBay.
I mean, everything has a price. everything has a price, obviously. But we'll see. I intend to keep it. It's precious to me. Anyway, let's get back to Dune.
So here's some things I want to do. I want to talk about my initial feelings leaving the film. I want to talk about, like you said, some choices they made from book to movie. I want to hear about any experience. I mean, you shared some of your feelings already, but I want to hear a little bit more about that. So let's dive in.
And there's a little room for nitpicks.
Yeah, I have minimal nitpicks.
I have minimal, but I've got a few. So I don't want to be uncritical. There's a few, just like there was in the first movie. And the flaws, they don't take away from how great it is because it's a great movie.
And you know what? It set me to a place where I was like, I want to read this book again.
Right.
I mean, so I could see people reading the book for the first time because of this or even be like just wanting to get back into that world again because of how good this movie is.
It's phenomenal. And speaking of the books, so one thing that I alluded to that maybe we could start talking about is I feel like some of the changes go a long way to setting up Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically that I think when you read the books, it feels a little more resolved at the end of part one. Or at end of book one, rather. Paul has won. He's now, you know, in charge of the Imperium, all of that. Here, they do a good job of making it clear that the war has started and that there's more to come.
Yeah.
It does feel like this movie, not that if Messiah doesn't happen, this will still be a monumental achievement and it is complete, but it does feel like it's looking forward to the next part.
Yeah, I don't know. If to the average viewer, it's complete. I'd say for you and me, maybe.
Right.
But this is setting up a third part. And I don't think they'll call it Dune Messiah. I think it'll be Dune Part 3. Don't you think?
Probably. I'd love for it to be called Dune Messiah.
I think it's Dune Part 3. Right. I think we're going to see a trilogy here.
Yes.
And it's definitely, if you just look, like, forget about what we know, there's no way this is not setting up a sequel. And based on how well it did, we're going to get it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think that unless for some reason Denis Villeneuve doesn't want to do it, which he said he does.
Yeah.
He's writing the script.
They've already cast people.
Yeah. Let's come back to that in just a second.
I want to just talk about some feelings.
Okay. You talk about your feelings.
Man, I've shared some of this with you. We've talked more about this film than I usually like to. So I feel like some of it will be repeat for you. But for the audience's sake, let me just rehash some things. So in the middle of this film, I wasn't even doing it on purpose. Involuntarily, I could feel myself just smiling, like I'm so into it and just so impressed with what I'm seeing. As the movie ends, like right when they say, Jessica says something about it's the start of the Holy Wars or something.
Yeah.
What was the exact line? Do you remember?
I don't recall.
But the thing that we're talking about that sends us into part three, and I'm realizing this is it. They're going to end it right here. I wasn't watching my clock. I was just watching the movie, and I realized this is the end. I just start smiling and nodding, and I'm just like, I literally, in my head, I went to this movie alone, so there was no one to talk to. In my head, I'm just saying to myself,
well, you shouldn't be talking anyway. Which is,
no, I mean, the movie's over. I'm walking out of the film. I'm just thinking, what an awesome movie. I just couldn't. I said to you, I felt like I was in awe of it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe. It was more than just a viewing to me. It seems weird, because I'm not necessarily, I like the Doom books. I wouldn't say I'm, like, obsessed with them. I just, I enjoy them, and we did deep dive on 7 books.
Yeah.
But I guess it's not because I'm just a super fan. I just think what they crafted here, it's more, to me, it was more than a viewing experience. It was like an experience. And did you read my review? This is too far. It felt like transcendent a little bit.
But I get it. And I don't
exactly understand why I felt that way. It just felt big.
I think Denis Villeneuve has an ability to do that. I felt the same way with both these movies, but especially with Blade Runner 2049. And I think it's that part of what he and Christopher Nolan have in common is they make movies that are worth going to the theaters for.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see this in IMAX?
Yeah, I had to.
You have to.
Yeah, you have to.
That's
you know, I didn't see Blade Runner 2049 in IMAX, and I left that, I think I gave it a 4.5, but I didn't feel like this.
Yeah. They make movies that are immersive in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, if you watch this on your phone, it's still a great movie, but it's not as great of a movie as it is. And I think that, you know, the moments that really come through on that, the two that really stand out to me, and it's throughout the whole movie, but the two that really stand out are Paul riding the sandworm for the first time was incredible, especially if you look at, and with all love for David Lynch, who I would like give up my left arm to get more David, you know, another decade of David Lynch movies or something. Probably not literally, but I love David Lynch. The sand riding in that movie looks so bad.
How many times have you seen Dune by David Lynch? Just the ones with me?
2 or 3.
I think I'm going to rewatch it. I'm just into Dune right now. I think I'll give it a rewatch here.
You've never seen the sci-fi miniseries, have you?
No, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you've been saying for months you were going to loan it to me.
Well, you got
to
remind me of these. I say a lot of things.
I think I remind you when you're here, but that gives you a week to forget.
Yeah, you got to. I wonder if there's a way to do like a time message in Facebook Messenger. You should do a time message for me on the like the night before.
So, yes, I do want to watch the Dune one.
But yeah, the sandworm writing looks just terrible. The quality of those movies aside, which isn't good to begin with. But here, it was so immersive and such an experience. The other moment is when the atomics go off and detonate the shield wall. You feel that. Mm-hmm. Like, that is one of the coolest moments I've ever experienced in theater.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're using terms like immersive and cool and everything, and it's more than that, though, because anybody can have big visuals.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Bay knows how to do big explosions, and you can have sound, but it's what these moments mean. It's the combination of spectacle with character and storytelling that makes this so special. And that's where it feels similar to something like Lord of the Rings, like the ride of the Rohirrim at Minas Tirith. And you feel that because you're invested in what's going on. Yeah, Michael Bay can set off an explosion as, you know, Bumblebee does whatever he does in those movies, haven't seen them. And you can feel it because that's just a matter of sound being cranked up, but it's different here. It is that more holistic experience.
I talked in my review about, and again, I kind of hate to admit this, not because I think it's bad to show emotion, it's just, I know it's just Dune, but there was a part where I started to kind of tear up. I mean, multiple parts where I could feel myself filling with emotion.
Yeah.
And I will admit, I think this part has to do with the fact that we have read through the whole story. So
right.
I know what some of the hints are aiming at, which is interesting. Even Dune Part 1, I think I enjoyed the experience more having read all the books.
Yeah.
So I won't want to say every time, but multiple times when there was something to do with Paul fulfilling the prophecies. I think the first time it really hit me is when he chooses the name Moab for himself. Something about that scene,
it was so good.
I started to feel, I mean, not that I was going to just start crying there, but You know, like tears starting to come to my eyes over this scene. And then it happened again when Chaney's talking to Paul about how she'll teach him the ways of her people. And it's like, I don't know why I'm feeling so much over these scenes. I know I've read the book twice. I know where this is going. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that? Why did anything impact you emotionally like that?
Yeah, I mean, it is a more emotional one. It's especially Chaney's and Paul's storyline. The Mon Div naming scene was so great because they didn't use the term Mon Div at all in the first movie. And so heading into part two, I'm like, of course it's going to be in here, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what if they don't? Like, what if they don't? Because they've edited out other words like jihad and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what if they don't? And then when we got not only Mon Div, but Usul, I was so happy. Like, yeah. that was perfect. But, you know, you mentioned like the scene of Chaney teaching him. The scene I loved in this is when he has to cross the desert or whatever, and she shows up and they do the sand walk together. I don't know how you feel about this, but when we talk about nitpicks in part one, the sand walking scene of him and Jessica is so cheesy.
Oh, really? No, it didn't bother me.
Oh, it sticks out like a sore thumb to me every time, but it's so good in this one that it redeems it. It made the first movie better because it's now the parallel to that scene.
Having just watched part one again, there's only one thing that sticks out to me as like, this is a bad choice, and it's the desert power thing. We've joked about it. Just that phrase, for some reason, it seems like a joke.
So,
does it kind of pay off here? Because he doesn't say desert power, but he says the power of the desert in part two.
Yeah.
Like, Paul's reflecting back.
Thematically, it does. But yeah, there's a few things like that. And there's one in this that I think is even worse in part
movie?
Two.
Oh, okay. I want to quickly say, I think I called her Chaney because I can't help it because the audiobook calls her Chaney. But I do think changing her name to Chaney or however it's supposed to be pronounced.
I mean, you just,
Chaney's the best choice.
Yeah, you just picture Paul with Dick Chaney and it doesn't work.
Right. It's definitely Chaney.
But it's a very different interpretation. So the desert power thing, I agree. I think I've mentioned this before, that when scripts use, they have different characters all using the exact same phrase, to me, it starts to feel forced and lazy, where what they're trying to do is, I like the theme. I like the theme coming through, but when you have the same turn of phrase cropping up in everybody's mouth, it just feels artificial to me. The example I always think of, and I love Battlestar Galactica, but in Battlestar Galactica, they have characters, especially in the first season, saying, the Cylons look like ice now. You know, they use like that exact phrase, different characters over and over and over again. It's like, oh, hello, Mr. Scriptwriter. You're just dropping your stock phrase in to another character's mouth. That's how I feel about desert power.
Okay.
What do you think I'm seizing on in the second one that honestly bugged me even more?
Man, you know, I can't think of it, so just give it to us.
It's actually one word. Fundamentalists.
Oh, yes.
Terrible word choice.
Okay.
It too many syllables. It feels artificial because it does feel like they're trying to dance around the word jihad. I don't mind the I don't mind this whole idea, which is a little foreign to the book, of like the more extreme Fremen are in the South. I just think you needed a different word. Fundamentalists sounds clunky to me every time I hear it in the movie, especially when you compare to the more Middle Eastern feel that the Fremen culture has and the Fremen language has. It just, I feel like you're tripping over that constantly in the script.
It didn't bother me. I noticed that word. Can you think of a word that would have been a better choice here?
I don't know. I'm also not getting paid millions of dollars to write the script, but I would look for something that's fewer syllables, maybe a little bit flows better with the language. It just so stands out as the script writer dropping in a word to communicate an idea and then putting it in here, and here so that you're tracking with it. It's the same problem as desert
power. This is just off the top of my head. It's still a lot of syllables, but would you have liked something more like a true believer?
Something like that. The zealots. Zealot is good. Zealot. You know, that has that hard Z kind of has a little bit more of that Arabic flavor to it, I guess, in my mind. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's not a perfect solution. I just didn't like the word.
All right, I told you a lot of my emotions.
Yeah.
Tell me about yours. because we don't have to go through plot by plot, but I want to hear about what you felt when you were watching it.
Yeah, I mean, the spectacle is overwhelming. I think it's just too... just being... there's almost a pinch yourself that it's real, in part because, A, Dune is so hard to adapt. You know, the miniseries is awful. The David Lynch movie is pretty awful. And now it's like... I felt like I did when I watched Lord of the Rings for the first time. It's like, this actually exists, and it's here, and it's good. and it's incredible. And then I think, too, I don't know about you, but it felt like the release of this movie crept up on me a little bit because it got delayed, and then it got delayed again. And, you know, you had COVID for the first one, and you had all this stuff. And so it felt like, oh, holy crap, it's here. I think it's... it was so gratifying to watch them stick the landing. And it's like, even, and we'll talk about a couple more nitpicks in a minute, but even with like, and the fundamentalist thing, even as I'm saying that, it did bug me, but it's so minor. I think of like how I feel about Lord of the Rings. I have nitpicks aplenty in Lord of the Rings. We've talked about them over the years, like Gimli's character, and there's nothing as bad in this as there is what they did to Gimli in that trilogy. But like with Lord of the Rings, when I watch it, moment by moment, I might feel a criticism. I might feel like, oh, I wish they would have done this better. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, man, like, this is Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings. I'd be really curious to see what a different director would do with this and maybe emphasize more of this as opposed to that. And so I have all these thoughts going on in my head. And but then when it's over, or even not when it's over, when you just take that step back, I'm so overwhelmed by how incredible it is that we have a Lord of the Rings trilogy that's this powerful and this good. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way. It's like I'm overwhelmed by the whole. So with Denis Villeneuve, I have some nitpicks, you know, fundamentalist, desert power. I wish that there when we talk about a different director's vision, I would love to see a trippier version of Dune, something that lends itself a little bit more to the surrealism.
I kind of feel like some of the weird things that are happening in Dune will get as, I believe in the third movie, it could be really opened up because
the first movie
did well. Second movie is doing even better. People are all in now.
But they definitely downplayed some of the things about the Kwisatz Haderach. And I just would have liked a little more surrealism in here. And that's, I don't even mean that as a criticism. It's just like I'd love to see, which is ironic because we had David Lynch. But it was early David Lynch. It wasn't David Lynch, you know, post Twin Peaks, The Return. But like, so there's part of me that's like, man, I'd love to see a different great version of Dune that would do some of these other choices a little bit different. But then I'm so incredibly overwhelmed by the whole. It's like, but this is so awesome that this exists. So that's where I'm at feeling wise. Should we talk about Aaliyah, though?
Yes, definitely.
What did you think of that choice?
Well, you kind of spoiled me on it, which is no big deal. We talked
about
it.
How did I spoil you?
Well, I mean, it's not a spoiler. It's fine. We talked about her. Oh, yeah. You talk about the casting or about the unborn baby scenes?
Both.
Oh, well, the casting we did talk about in our preview episode. Yeah, no big deal. I don't mind that. So casting wise, I feel fine about that. And I to me, that means the third movie is coming sooner than later.
Agreed.
The unborn baby scenes. I mean, if you want trippy, that goes on some of the.
And that's what I want more of that.
Yeah, because I think this movie could have went more down that road, but you still have to be okay for a general audience. So I think this would have been the scenes that would be like right on the fence for general audience people. But for me, it worked.
Yeah. What did you think more of the choice to not have Aaliyah?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
In the movie. I mean, she's in the movie, but she's not.
Yes. Yes. Because in the book, she's born before then.
She's a 2-year-old who kills the Baron.
Right. Exactly. I like this better, I think.
Yeah.
It's weird to say I like it better than what Frank Herbert chose, but if you're just telling a shorter story, because we don't have the entire novel to work with, I think this worked well.
I don't like it better than what Frank Herbert chose, but I don't know if you can actually depict what Frank Herbert chose in a convincing way. And we have two adaptations so far that say you can't. So
also, can you imagine a film...
right.
Featuring a 2-year-old murdering a man?
Yes, because David Lynch's Dune does it.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
And it doesn't work.
It doesn't work?
No. So I think that if as Denis Villeneuve and creative team, you sit down and you say, this is what's in the text. We don't have a convincing way to pull this off. This is the best alternative solution.
You know, I think what we get here actually is a much shorter timeline because...
Yeah, you're 100% book, right.
You just said 2 years. In the book, Paul has years to prepare.
Yes.
Here, he's kind of rising to power quite quickly. I think we're looking at months.
Yeah, Jessica had, you know, an 18-month pregnancy or so. No, they condensed the timeline quite a bit. And that's a little bit of a cheat, but I'll give it to him. It's fine. Like, that doesn't bother
me. It doesn't bother me, but... So we get... I mean, it could be no more than 9 months then.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it's fine. It's a little bit of a cheat to avoid the Aaliyah issue. I'll give it to him. I will say, if you accept, and I don't think it's a given, like I could see somebody saying, well, no, here's how you do Aaliyah, like in the books. So Aaliyah in the books in a convincing way would be my first choice. I don't know if that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not possible... This is a great alternative.
And Paul still says the line that Aaliyah says when he kills Baron.
Yes. Plus, I love the idea. I loved when Jessica took the water of life, the scenes of the amniotic fluid.
Is that... I was going to ask you this. I don't remember from the book. Is the definition or the explanation of the water of life the same in the book as it is here?
Yeah.
I don't remember a scene in the book where somebody showed her a baby snake or sandworm.
I don't know if that exact scene is in there, but the concept is in the books.
Okay.
And I say that because I can't recall if it's in the first Dune or not. But yeah, I love that. I thought that was great. I also kind of like that Jessica, talking about setting up Dune Messiah, I kind of love that Jessica is this driving factor behind the jihad, much more so in the movie.
Like sort of an antagonist.
Yeah, because she's not in Messiah. She comes back in Children of Dune. I assume they will bring Rebecca Ferguson back for Messiah.
They'll have to change it, right?
And so I love her character arc in Messiah. What it should be is regret.
Because in Messiah, doesn't she try to form some sort of coalition against Paul?
You're thinking of Irulan.
Okay, well, Irulan.
Jessica's not in Messiah.
What they did with Irulan in this movie, that's a huge change from the book, I loved.
Yeah.
Like inserting her into the story all the way through.
Agreed.
To me, she was one of the highlights of the whole film.
Yeah, she's really good. And she doesn't have a ton of screen time, but she's really, really good with it. But yeah, I think with Jessica, they'll work her into the plot of Messiah. And now her arc becomes, she pushed for this. She pushed Paul into this. And the regret when she sees the 60 billion dead from the jihad, after all. Like, I think you can do some really great things with her character arc in the third movie because of what some of the changes they did here. I did love her line talking of surrealistic moments that, like, part of what I'm responding to is that where they touch on it, they do a really good job, and I want so much more, is when she's talking to Paul about the vision, she says, "You can't imagine the beauty and the horror." Like, that's such a great line. And I don't think that's from Frank Herbert.
Hmm.
I could be wrong, but that's such a great and terrifying line.
This is not a nitpick necessarily because I enjoyed the whole thing, but Paul does a great job at fighting going to the south.
Yeah.
Over and over again, he's trying not to do this. But then when he does make the choice, he basically just goes all in and it advances quite quickly. And of course, this is where Chani turns against him. So... did that work for you? How quickly that moved? Even the travel to the south was like 1 minute there in the north, and all of a sudden, snap your fingers, and he's there with Jessica.
So I have rules for myself about movies cheating, which is that if you're going to cheat, make it worthwhile. And if I'm invested and you're doing good things with it, I'll accept your cheat. If you're... later seasons of Game of Thrones where we just throw out all the geography and people are basically teleporting and you're doing it to be lazy. Not so much. You're cheating, but you're not cheating in a good cause. This movie cheats, and it cheats in a good cause.
Okay.
It cheats to get us where we need to go for the purpose of the characters, themes, and stories. So I accept it. Ideally, would I like a little bit less cheating? Yeah. But I can go with that.
When you're saying cheating, I'm specifically thinking of Paul just going all in so quickly. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about the travel?
The travel, the timeline. Because what you're talking about when you say Paul going in all quickly is a symptom of condensing the timeline down to a handful of months.
Okay.
So it's part of that cheat.
Yeah, I guess I get what you're saying.
I do love, though, that when he crosses that boundary, because he's like holding himself back mm-hmm. from it, and once he crosses it, there's no going back. Mm-hmm. I do love that it's, you know, like that.
Remind me, in the books, I don't remember Chani being a negative force in his life, like turning against him in this way. Is this different?
It is different. So a couple things that happened in the books, because we have the more advanced timeline, Leto the Second, not the one we know right. and love, is their child who's born and is killed by the Harkonnens.
At what point? I do remember all this, but where would you insert that into the movie?
Actually, no, I'm sorry. He's killed by the Sardaukar, because the Sardaukar, once the Emperor decides to intervene, they do a raid on the Fremen. They kill Paul's son and kidnap Aaliyah. And that's how Aaliyah winds up in the throne room with the Baron at the end.
Right.
And that's what triggers Paul
heading to the south.
Well, they don't really quite have the same south-north divide in this. That's another little cheat that I'll give them to make it clear to audiences.
Like he's crossing a threshold. Right.
Totally fine. That one doesn't even bother me at all.
No.
But it's a little foreign to the book.
Essentially, that's where that... So you're saying the scene you just described from the book would be inserted before Paul heads to the south, but...
They replaced it with the destruction of the siege.
Okay.
Of Siege Tavr in this, which is fine. I actually think that's an okay choice.
I forgot. I mean, I knew he had Leto the First. Or no,
Leto the Second. And then we have Leto the Second the Second.
Yeah.
Who becomes the God Emperor.
Oh, whoa. We're not supposed to spoil the whole...
I'm sorry.
All the books.
Let's
just put a spoiler at the beginning for all the books. But no, I'm distracted. But yes, okay. I knew there was a baby. I didn't remember when the baby died. So that explains it.
Yes.
So that's what pushes him over the edge.
Chani doesn't leave him at the end of it. Like she does here.
Yeah.
Because remember, the final line of the book is history will call us wives, which is Jessica talking to Chani, because Chani's now the concubine just like Jessica was.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that, because by the start of Messiah, you know, Paul and Chani are basically de facto married, and it's Irulan who is spurned and bitter, mm-hmm. and Paul's married to her but has never even been to her bed, and, you know, and so that kind of sets off some of the drama that's in Messiah.
And the Bene Gesserit stuff with Irulan, that's way underplayed is it book two?
Yeah, and it's great. I love that they brought in Gaius Helmahaya more. Charlotte Rapline, I think it's her last name, fantastic actress who plays her, so good. She is... If you just want to see her dramatic chops, there's a movie, Criterion movie called 45 Years. I highly recommend. Really, really good movie. And she's in that. Actually, the director of that directed several episodes of the OA that we're talking about later.
Yeah,
anyway.
Over on the Extra Feed, listeners, we're going to talk about the whole Netflix series, the OA. A series I love and Ben finally watched it.
And we haven't even talked about Christopher Walken as the Emperor. He's great.
Yeah, I'm glad he doesn't play Christopher Walken as the Emperor.
Right. But I like just this quiet intensity he brings to everything.
Yeah, the end is where he's at his best.
Yes.
The end of the film.
Speaking of intensity, you know, a lot of the action in this movie feels a little inevitable, which I don't mean as a criticism at all, meaning that once Paul goes all in, you know, we bring the atomics and the sandworms, it's just like this overwhelming force. The knife fight with Fade Rautha was so intense and so good. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was incredible.
You know, I'm watching it like a little worried for Paul.
Right.
And I had to remind myself, I know how this story is going to go. I've read this scene twice.
Yeah.
It is really good. I didn't necessarily think, I feel like you're about to disagree with me. I didn't necessarily love Fade Rautha in this movie.
I was very bald.
They're all bald. Oh, this reminds me. I was never even going to bring this up. Let's come back to Fade Rautha.
Okay.
The black and white scenes.
Yeah.
What are they doing filmmaking-wise with that? When we're on the Harkonnen planet, it's like when we're outdoors, it's black and white, but when we're indoors...
The implication is that the Harkonnen sun doesn't shed light. It takes it away.
Oh. Wow. Yeah. How did you get that?
Well, that's like because when they're outside under the sun,
yeah,
or the Geaty Prime sun, I should say, that's when everything goes black and white. It's incredible cinematography.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was cool, but I thought I was trying to express something. I guess I didn't realize there was going to be a scientific reason for it.
Yeah.
Where do you get that? That's just you in your own head?
Well, I think
have you heard anybody
only,
explain
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I've heard it explained that way, but I think it's really the only conclusion you can draw from what's in the film.
All right, back to Fedrotha. You liked him, it sounds like?
I did.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was. It might just be that I don't like the character because he's so evil and brutal.
Well,
so I don't want to hold that against the actor.
Right.
I know you're not supposed to like him. He's the bad guy. But you know how sometimes you can still like the bad guys? Like the Emperor. He's a bad guy, but you kind of like him. Yeah, the Harkonnens are just hard to like, but maybe that's the whole point.
Yeah.
All the Harkonnens are just horrible.
I agree.
Okay, I'll drop it.
No, it's fine. Can I give you a couple of my nitpicks?
Yeah.
So we talked about the fundamentalist one. That one bugged me. Don't love Stilgar's arc in this movie.
How did it differ from the book?
Stilgar's basically like all in the movie from the beginning. And one of my favorite lines in the book is when Paul says something to the effect of, it's like, it's not dialogue, but his internal narration. He had lost a friend and gained a worshiper.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a moment of conversion for Stilgar in the book. And it's one of my favorite moments.
Wait, wasn't there a line like that in the movie? I think he did say something like that, maybe to Gurney.
Not that I recall. Okay. I'll have to watch it again.
But not about Stilgar. I think about the people just in general.
Yeah. But like and Javier Bardem does an amazing job as Stilgar. I still like the character in this. It's not a butchering of his character, but I would have loved for Stilgar to have a little bit more of an arc.
Okay.
Than he just being the pro Paul spokesman in this.
I didn't mind it, but I hear you.
So didn't love that. I wish we could have gotten the Friends of Jameis scene.
Okay. I knew you were going to bring this up because we talked about it offline. I don't know if you remember, but after we saw the first movie and it ended right before that scene, I mentioned to you, I love that scene in the book.
Yeah.
And you said, I imagine that's how the next movie will open.
Right.
Yeah. It was really missing. I was expecting it to be there. I also was bummed out. I understand as you're trying to move the plot along, but yeah, I missed that.
I agree. Shorten it, put something in. But, you know, I could have lost a minute or two of attacks on spice harvesters if we got Friends of Jameis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I get it. You're trying to, it's like this stupid general. Why are people so dumb? Like if people weren't so dumb, then we could have even nicer things. We could have an even better version of the dude. And what we have is great. But it's like concessions for idiots. That's what a lot of these nitpicks come down to. We have to use the term fundamentalists because the cattle can't handle understanding the use of a term like jihad. Well, here we are.
Anything else?
So I think those are my nitpicks. Oh, the one other thing I wanted to mention that I loved was Paul in the council where he goes with in the south. When he strides in there,
yes.
he just goes ham on him. It was so good.
And this actually brings up a point I wanted to ask you about, talk to you about. Again, I don't want to keep saying it, but I've read the books. I read this book twice, or I should say Dune, just the original Dune. So I know the story, but I still have a question. And it was made even more clear here. So the Bene Gesserit create these, in quotes, prophecies.
Yes.
So that when they land on different planets, they can fulfill the prophecies and then the local people will treat them well.
Yes.
I get that. But it seems like, even though they made up a story.
Yeah, it's not quite that clear cut, is it?
They made up a story and Paul is making that story come true, but he does seem to have supernatural powers. And then we have some of the Bene Gesserit talk about through their breeding program, they knew they were making a powerful person. So I guess I just wanted to ask you, even though I've read the books and I've seen these movies, can you help me understand a little bit where's the line between everything is made up and he's just fulfilling the prophecies in order to trick the people and he actually has supernatural powers that were bred into him?
Oh, so three thoughts. Number one, he definitely has supernatural powers because of the whole past lives Kwisatz Haderach thing. To the extent that they are supernatural. I guess in Dune universe, they're more extra.
And even like, I mean, I know he was just using the past lives, but telling the people about things he knew about them.
Yep.
Like, although, wait, he knew somebody's dream. That's not a thing he could have got from an ancestor.
Yeah. Well, like, he's also prescient, though. He's the Kwisatz Haderach.
Okay, so is the prophecy a prophecy, or is it a made-up story from the Bene Gesserit?
So, a couple things on that. It's ambiguous on purpose. Like, yes, the Bene Gesserit, it seems like he's a fraud, but then there's things, even in the first movie, like when he knows how to put on the stillsuit, you know, he shall know your ways as if born to them. Like, there's things that suggest that Paul, while he is fulfilling what the Bene Gesserit planted, is actually something more. And then there's other things that suggest he's a fraud. And then regardless of which he is a Kwisatz Haderach who can, you know, is the male who takes the water of life. He's the result of the Bene Gesserit breeding program. He has all of his past lives. He also sees, you know, prescient into the future.
Do you feel like they made that totally clear to an audience that hasn't read the books?
No.
That he can...
No.
He's in communication with all ancestors, and he can see forward?
And I think they obscured some of that on purpose because of the cattle. Like, this is, again...
Oh, my gosh.
This is, again, where I wanted a little more surrealism. Like, I want to see, you know, Paul arguing with his past life.
Who's that one powerful past life person that we're going to meet eventually?
Oh.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought there was one scene where some... Yeah, Harum.
Yeah.
There was one scene where... He was getting advised, and I wanted it to be Harum. I kind of thought it might be. Like, for a second,
that'd
I felt like it was, like, on the tip of their tongue, but they didn't go there.
Yeah.
So, I think Harum may have been mildly featured in this movie. That's my headcanon.
They're going to stop the series before it goes too trippy. Can you imagine they go all God Emperor of Dune on us?
I don't know. I don't know how they could do it. Okay, two more thoughts before we get off this track that you're on. So, we talked about being a... Definitely we'll get a part three, but still we live in a world where we have to think about the general audience. So Fade Rautha impregnates Lady Fenring.
Yeah.
As far as I remember in the books, that baby is a non-character, right? Like, this does not matter that she's pregnant. But in the movie, you can't leave it there. Like, you can't just...
Is it...
You can't drop in that he's impregnated her and then move on. So to me, they're going to do something with that in this new version of Dune here in the movies, but just remind me, in the books,
unless it,
like, that baby never becomes a character that we care about.
I think you're right. I'm googling to double check, because I feel like maybe it does.
Okay, while you're googling that, I want to say this. You have mentioned Lord of the Rings multiple times. We've talked about it offline. It does feel like that's an obvious comparison.
Yes.
Other people that maybe haven't read the books or just are experiencing this only as a movie, they've been comparing it to Star Wars. Like, here, it's today's Star Wars. I just feel like it's so different than Star Wars.
Oh,
so
I completely agree.
So much more powerful than Star Wars. It's hard for me to say, to make that comparison, although us and some of our friends were, like, touching on some things that there were some similarities.
Yeah.
In general, Star Wars is like pop culture popcorn. I do like it. But,
yeah.
And this is like... There's something happening here.
Right. There's thematic depth here. And there is in at least some of the Star Wars. But, I mean, part of where that comparison naturally lends itself is that George Lucas was influenced heavily by Dune. You know,
oh, that's interesting.
It's all over the place.
Well, I mean, we knew that. Of course, you and I have talked about that before, but I guess... I hadn't really thought about that when
it's a more Star natural comparison.
So people are comparing it to Star Wars when Star Wars was not based on, but influenced by Dune.
Star Wars is in some ways dumbed down Dune at times. I say it with great love for the original trilogy.
I think you're right, though. Lord of the Rings, where you view it almost as one thing, those three movies.
Yes.
I imagine that's how we'll view Dune Part 1, 2, and 3. Although Part 2 does have... I don't know if I should use this phrase. I don't think you like it, but kind of the Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back ending, where it's like, oh, things aren't going so well here in Part 2. But is that just a common trilogy trope, or did Star Wars start that?
It's a common trilogy trope.
But did Star Wars start it? Is it common because of Star Wars?
No. It's a storytelling technique. But so I'm going to disagree with that a little bit more,
though. Which part?
What you just said, that it has that Empire Strikes Back ending feel, because... if audience, I won't disagree, it does. But I think if audiences are interpreting that as we're about to get a happy ending, they're going to hate Dune Messiah.
I think we should say Dune Part 3. There's no way they're going to call it Dune Messiah.
I'm calling it Dune Messiah.
Okay.
They're going to hate Messiah because that is not what you're watching there. You're not watching Han Solo go down in carbonite and then we're going to unthaw him in Jabba's palace.
Yeah, like where do they think? That would be an interesting question. We've spoiled so much here. Hopefully the only people listening don't mind being spoiled or have already know the story. But I'd like to hear from somebody who doesn't know where the story is going. Do they think Paul's going to turn over a new leaf in the next movie?
Yeah, no, it's much worse. In fact, because the book ends...
I think we're spoiling too much, but whatever.
They're fine. Because the book ends feeling more resolved than the movie does, it's really like when you open up Dune Messiah and you realize, oh, he's kind of a monster.
Yeah.
Like, that's
that,
the...
You know, this movie did a better job than the book. Well, again, we...
Did a different job.
A different job, because we love Frank Herbert and what he did, but... Like when you and I were talking and Paul wins, it's like, is this good or bad? We couldn't exactly tell what his motivations are because of the Chani character. We're led down a road of, oh, this is bad. And
yeah.
That is where the next story goes.
Yes.
I don't know, maybe, but you and I both like when things are a little bit ambiguous. So maybe, I guess like you said, it's a different version.
Yeah.
But I appreciate this.
I do too.
I think it's going to be good to have Chani be a character that helps us see the other side. I don't know how they're going to have babies.
Yeah, that's true.
If you just had to speculate, how are we on a road for them to have kids? Are they not going to?
She'll be back. She'll be back in Paul's fold.
Yeah, well, she said she'd fight for the Fremen.
But she'll be back in Paul's immediate influence. Yeah. I think there'll be some differences, but I expect Messiah will wind up at the same place.
So you think part three ends and we have two kids?
Yeah.
They have to do Children of Dune. And then that could be its own trilogy. So we got Dune Part 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Children of Dune Part 1, 2, and 3. That's happening.
Ending with God Emperor.
Yes. That's happening.
And then things get X-rated.
I think God Emperor would be like Part 2.
That'd be great.
Part 1 is Children of Dune. Part 2 is God Emperor. Part 3 is...
The cattle will never... They'll never be able to handle it.
It's happening. All right. I think we've done this.
Yes.
We've done a good job. We love this movie. Sounds like you like you were way more nitpicky than I thought you were, but you just love it.
I do love it.
The only nitpick I put in my review, I'm reviewing it quickly, is I love the soundtrack in the first movie, and having just rewatched it, it was fresh in my head how much it steered me and moved me during the film. I thought the part two soundtrack was a little less it was like underplayed a little bit. Thoughts on that?
I think I felt that way watching it. I've listened to the soundtrack a couple times on Spotify, and I don't think I agree now.
Okay.
I'm going to pay attention to that, though, when I rewatch it this week.
All right, listeners. Well, we've said a lot, maybe too much. I think we're going to have to add a spoiler warning to the beginning.
It's fine.
I do feel a little bit bad.
They'll deal with it.
But listeners.
They're like 50-year-old books.
We hope you loved it. We loved it. That's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians, signing off. And
goodbye.
If you love the Netflix TV show The OA, go over to the extra, extra feed. It's a Patreon feed, which you can find at patreon.com/TheSciFiChristian. We're going to review the whole show, it's just two seasons, right now, tonight. All right, well, Star Wars has like a phrase everybody says, you know,
yeah.
Let the Force be with you. May the Force be with you. Does Dune have anything like that? Like, can we send them off with a nice Dune phrase?
No, I think people would say the spice must flow, but that's not in the books. That's from the David Lynch movie.
Oh, wow. We got to think of something. That can't be the way we end it.
Well, it's been nice Dune business with you.
That's better.